Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad you're here.
Today, we're jumping into a really interesting Alabama Supreme Court case. It's First Properties, LLC, JP Morgan Chase Bank.
Ah, yes. This one's a great example of, well, how property law details really, really matter.
Exactly. It digs into property rights, how recording errors can cause chaos, and the protections for mortgage holders.
And the core tension is fascinating, right? You've got a property foreclosed for, of all things, unpaid fire dues.
Yeah, then it gets mortgaged, then sold again, leading to this big question, who actually owns it?
It really shows how something that sounds simple, like recording a deed, can go sideways fast.
For sure. And the domino effect is huge. So for this deep dive, we've looked at some internal guidance notes, a pretty detailed perplexity analysis brief, and a standard case brief, too.
Our mission, basically, is to pull out the key takeaways from all that, especially for listeners interested in the legal field, maybe law students.
Right. Let's unpack it. So where does this whole tangled story begin? What's the timeline?
Okay, so it kicks off way back in October 1998. October 19th, to be precise.
And that's when the Jefferson County Fire District foreclosed on Ruthie Adumas' property.
That's right, for unpaid fire protection dues. And, interestingly, the fire district itself was the buyer at the auction.
Okay, seems straightforward enough so far, but we know there's a catch.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first big problem?
Here's where it gets messy, and this is really the heart of the matter. The foreclosure deed they recorded, it was problematic.
Problematic how?
Well, for starters, it listed the fire district as both the grantor, the one selling or transferring, and the grantee, the one receiving it.
Wait, it listed the same entity on both sides. How does that even work?
Exactly. It doesn't, logically. It breaks the chain. Plus, it didn't properly name Ruthie Adumas as the owner whose property was being foreclosed.
Okay, so no clear link back to the previous owner.
And to top it off, the property description itself was apparently inadequate.
Wow. So that initial recording was flawed on multiple levels. That sounds like a recipe for disaster down the line.
You got it. That's the first critical nugget, as you said. That defective deed is key.
So despite this foreclosure flawed recording or not, what happens next?
Well, here's the next twist. In 1999, somehow Ruthie Adumas gets a mortgage on that same property.
The one that was supposedly foreclosed on by the fire district?
The very same one. From a company called First Franklin Financial Corporation.
Okay, hold on. How could that happen? Wouldn't a mortgage company check the records? Wouldn't they see the foreclosure?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? And it leads right back to that defective deed. Because it wasn't recorded properly, naming the right parties, and linking clearly to Dumas.
It was basically hidden, hard to find in a standard search.
Precisely. It wasn't easily discoverable in the chain of title, which we'll get into. But yeah, First Franklin grants the mortgage, and it gets recorded properly on January 13th, 2000.
Okay, so now there's a recorded mortgage on the property.
Right. And then, fast forward a bit to July 31st, 2004, First Franklin assigns that mortgage to JP Morgan Chase Bank.
So JP Morgan steps into First Franklin's shoes as the mortgage holder.
Correct. They now hold the security interest.
But the story doesn't end there, does it? What about the fire district and First Properties?
Nope. Another layer. On December 18th, 2004, the fire district decides to sell the property. They use a quitclaim deed to transfer it to First Properties, LLC.
The company mentioned in the case name.
That's the one. And interestingly, this deed, the quitclaim deed to First Properties, does mention Ruthie Adumas as the prior owner.
Huh. So they kind of acknowledge her connection then, even though their first deed didn't.
Seems like it. Maybe they realized the earlier error, or maybe it was just different people handling it. Who knows? But that quitclaim deed gets recorded just a few days later, December 23rd, 2004.
Okay, so now we have JP Morgan holding a mortgage from 2000 and First Properties holding a quitclaim deed from 2004, both tracing back somehow to Dumas, but with this botched 1998 foreclosure hanging over everything.
Exactly. And JP Morgan crucially claims it knew nothing about that 1998 fire district foreclosure because of how badly it was recorded.
So they take legal action.
They do. They file for a declaratory judgment, basically asking the court to officially state that they, JP Morgan, are a bona fide purchaser, or rather encumbrancer for value, and they had no notice of the fire district's prior claim when they took on the mortgage.
Which sets up the legal battle. Does J.P. Morgan's mortgage interest survive, or does First Properties' later purchase from the fire district take precedence?
That's the core conflict. And to resolve it, we need to understand some legal terms, starting with that bona fide purchaser idea.
Right. Or BFE, bona fide encumbrancer. For a mortgage holder like J.P. Morgan, what does that actually mean?
It means someone who acquires an interest in property, like a mortgage, in good faith, pays valuable consideration for it.
So they actually gave the loan money.
Right. And the key part here, they do so without notice of any prior claims or problems with the title.
Okay, notice seems absolutely critical. What kind of notice are we talking about? Is it just knowing something?
Well, there are different legal types. There's actual notice, literally knowing about the prior claim. Like if someone told you or you saw the document yourself.
Straightforward enough.
Then there's constructive notice. This is a legal fiction almost. The law says you're considered to have notice of anything that's properly recorded in the public land records within the property's chain of title, even if you never actually looked.
So if it's recorded correctly, you should have known. The law assumes you did.
Precisely. It's about discoverability through reasonable diligence. And finally, there's inquiry notice.
Inquiry notice? What's that?
That comes up if there's something weird or suspicious in the records, or maybe something visible on the property itself. That should make a reasonable person say, I should investigate this further. A red flag, basically. If there's a duty to inquire, you're charged of knowing whatever a reasonable inquiry would have revealed.
Okay. Actual, constructive, and inquiry notice. So J.P. Morgan's whole case rests on them not having had any of these regarding the 1998 foreclosure.
Exactly. They argued they had no actual notice, and crucially, no constructive notice because of how badly that foreclosure deed was recorded.
Let's dive into that constructive notice piece and the chain of title. Why was that deed so defective it didn't give constructive notice?
Okay, think of the chain of title like a family tree for the property's ownership.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Each deed is a link connecting one owner, parent, to the next child. To find the history, you trace it back, owner by owner, using the public indexes, usually by grantor and grantee names.
Makes sense.
For a deed to give constructive notice, it needs to be properly recorded and properly indexed so it shows up in that traceable line of ownership.
And the fire district's deed failed how?
Remember, it listed the fire district as both grantor and grantee.
Right, the weird loop.
And it didn't properly identify Dumas as the owner being foreclosed. So if you were searching the records under Ruthia Dumas as the grantor, the person losing the property,
you wouldn't find this deed.
Exactly. It wouldn't show up in her chain of title. It was recorded, sure, but it was floating out there, unconnected to the main lineage. It became what the law calls a wild deed.
A wild deed. Okay. So it's like a branch that fell off the family tree and is just lying on the ground, technically part of the history, but not findable by tracing the main branches.
That's a perfect way to put it. A standard title search wouldn't reasonably uncover it. Therefore, no constructive notice for J.P. Morgan or First Franklin before them.
Got it. So the defective recording broke the chain, making it legally invisible to future buyers or lenders doing standard checks.
Correct. Which brings up another major argument J.P. Morgan made, due process.
How does due process fit in? We usually think of that in criminal cases.
Well, the Constitution protects property rights, too. Due process essentially means the government can't deprive you of life, liberty, or property without following fair procedures.
And J.P. Morgan had a property interest mortgage?
A very significant one. Their mortgage was their security for the loan. A foreclosure by the fire district could potentially wipe out that security interest completely.
So their argument was they should have been properly notified before that interest could be extinguished.
Precisely. They argued that because the foreclosure deed was defective and hidden outside the chain of title, they never received legally adequate notice, actual or constructive, of the foreclosure action or the time limit, the redemption period, where they might have acted to protect their investment.
Like paying the fire dues themselves to stop the foreclosure affecting their mortgage.
Potentially, yes. But they argued they never got that chance because they were never properly notified, violating their due process rights.
Okay, so we have the defective deed, the wild deed concept, lack of notice, and the due process claim. How do the courts rule on all this?
The trial court actually sided with J.P. Morgan.
They did?
Yep. They found that J.P. Morgan was a bona fide encumbrancer for value without notice, largely because that 1998 foreclosure deed was so flawed it didn't provide constructive notice. They also agreed on the due process violation point.
And did First Properties appeal that?
Oh, absolutely. It went up to the Alabama Supreme Court.
And what was the final word from the state's highest court?
They affirmed the trial court's decision. They agreed with the reasoning.
So they upheld the ruling for J.P. Morgan.
Yes. The Alabama Supreme Court really hammered home the point that a wild deed, one that's outside the chain of title because of defects like incorrect indexing or naming the wrong grant or grantee,
like the fire district deed,
simply does not provide constructive notice to subsequent purchasers or encumbrancers who don't have actual knowledge.
So the fact that it was physically recorded wasn't enough because it wasn't findable through standard reasonable search methods.
Exactly. You have to be able to connect the dots back through the owner's name and the index.
Did First Properties try any other arguments? What about that inquiry notice idea? Did they argue J.P. Morgan should have sniffed out a problem somehow?
They did raise that. First Properties argued that maybe First Franklin, the original lender, should have been put on inquiry notice by something else in the title records, maybe some other ambiguity that would have triggered a duty to dig deeper.
And if they had dug deeper, maybe they'd have found the foreclosure.
That was the theory, but the Supreme Court shot that down too.
Why?
They basically said First Properties didn't show enough evidence that there was anything specific that should have triggered inquiry notice for First Franklin back in 1990-2000. And importantly, even if some title examiner working for First Franklin had somehow learned something, there wasn't an agency relationship that would automatically impute that knowledge to J.P. Morgan years later when the mortgage was assigned.
Okay, so no actual notice, no constructive notice because of the wild deed, and no inquiry notice established.
Yep.
The court basically protected J.P. Morgan's status as a BFE.
That's the essence of it.
So what was the practical outcome? What did the court order? Did First Properties lose the property?
The court confirmed J.P. Morgan's mortgage was valid and superior to First Properties' claim deriving from the flawed foreclosure. But it also gave J.P. Morgan a specific remedy, the right to redeem the property.
Redeem, meaning what exactly?
Yeah, meaning J.P. Morgan was given a window of time 3 months from the final order to essentially pay off the debt that led to the original foreclosure sale. That means paying the fire district assessment amount plus interest and any other legal costs.
And if they did that?
If they paid that amount, they would essentially clear the fire district's claim and First Property's subsequent title, protecting their mortgage interest fully. The court added a condition that this right existed as long as the original owner, Ruthie Adumas, was still in possession.
Wow. So J.P. Morgan gets to protect its mortgage by essentially stepping in and paying the original, relatively small fire assessment debt.
Compared to the value of the mortgage, yes. It underscores how significant that initial recording error was.
This case feels like required reading for anyone touching real estate law. What are the big takeaways here?
Number one, absolutely, is the paramount importance of accurate deed recording. Get the grantor right, get the grantee right, get the property description right, and make sure it's indexed correctly. It's not just paperwork. It's fundamental to notice.
It's the bedrock of constructive notice.
Totally. Second, the due process protection for mortgagees is real. They have a right to proper notice before their security interest gets potentially wiped out by a foreclosure.
You can't just foreclose in secret, essentially, if the records don't give proper notice.
Right. And third, it really solidifies the concept of the wild deed and its limitations. Just because a document is physically in the recorder's office doesn't mean it provides legal notice if it's not properly linked in the chain of title.
So meticulous title examination and recording practices aren't just best practices, they're legally critical.
Couldn't have said it better. It avoids messes like this one.
So to wrap this up, First Properties v. J.P. Morgan Chase is really a stark reminder, isn't it? A seemingly small recording mistake.
Listing the wrong party on a deed
can spiral into huge legal and financial consequences. It just highlights how crucial that chain of title concept and due process are for protecting everyone involved in property deals.
Absolutely. It's all about predictability and fairness in ownership records.
It leaves you thinking, though, here's something to mull over. If this had happened more recently with widespread e-recording systems.
Oh, interesting thought.
Could technology have prevented this? Would automated checks have caught the grantor grantee error? Or could tech create new kinds of notice problems?
That's a great question. E-recording aims to reduce errors, but yeah, are there new vulnerabilities? Definitely something to consider.
For sure. So for our listeners, especially law students, maybe dig into the chain of title doctrine in your state. See what the specific rules are for proper recording and notice where you are.
Yeah, the details matter immensely in property law.
Absolutely. Well, this case shows that even seemingly dry legal disputes have fascinating stories and really crucial lessons about balancing rights and ensuring fairness in property ownership.
A great deep dive.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.